Okay, we're beginning here with Masechet Rosh Hashanah on Daf Perem with Aleph. Before we start, we want to just give a little background to Rosh Hashanah. The first thing we have to know about Rosh Hashanah is that it's an extremely ambiguous term as well as holiday. As you can see here, just from the beginning of the Mishnah, it says, Arba'a Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are four Rosh Hashanahs. By the mere fact that there are four Rosh Hashanahs already introduces a problem, an issue as to what exactly defines Rosh Hashanah or why is something called Rosh Hashanah. In addition to that, the problem is more exacerbated by our practice, which is that we keep Rosh Hashanah, as we know it today, on the first of Tishrei. As far as the Torah and Tanakh are concerned, there is no such holiday as Rosh Hashanah, and certainly not on the first of Tishrei. Nowhere in the Torah does it mention the fact that the first of Tishrei, the first of the seventh month, is Rosh Hashanah. In the Torah, when it's mentioned, it's the holiday, the Chag, that is on Be'achad, the Chodesh HaShivi'i. In one place it's called a Yom Truah, in one place it's called a Zichron Truah, but it has no association with the concept of Rosh Hashanah whatsoever. And even in the Nevi'im Ktuvim, when it's mentioned, that holiday on the first of the seventh month has no connection to, quote-unquote, Rosh Hashanah. And if you look more carefully, when you look at the Torah, when it talks about some sort of changing of the year, that terminology is clearly not used with Rosh Hashanah as we know it. It's used with regards to Sukkot, which is Betzeta Shana. It's also one time the Tanakh that it's mentioned is in Sefer Yechezkel. It calls Rosh Hashanah to Yom HaKippurim. And that you do find a little more, which is that by Yom Kippur, we talk about some sort of changing of the year or turning of the year. But that's Yom HaKippurim and not associated with the first of the Shvi'i, the first of the seventh month. Now, part of that problem arises from what we know as the natural cycles. If you look at measurements of time in general, some of those cycles of time are what we call natural cycles, that everybody would agree that those cycles exist because they're natural phenomena that force those cycles. The other types of cycles, which are somewhat arbitrary, because there's nothing within the natural world which would force you to come to the conclusion there was such a cycle. So for instance, the cycle of months. The cycle of a month is a natural phenomenon with the waxing and the waning of the moon. So since the moon goes through a cycle of a month, that is a natural cycle to occur, which is the monthly cycle because of the way that the moon moves. On the other hand, when it comes to the week, the 7 days of the week, that's a completely arbitrary number. Obviously, it's not arbitrary. We know because of the way Hashem created the world and that seven is Shabbat, that the number represents something unique. But in truth, there's no reason to believe that a week should be 7 days, 10 days, 5 days. There's nothing within the natural cycle that would tell you that it should be 7 days. That's actually the Kuzari speaks about this with regards to proving that we all must come from a single person and that we all must have some sort of misora about the fact that everybody in the world keeps 7 days as a week, even though there's really no reason to believe that there should be 7 days in the week. Now, when it comes to, for instance, a day, when it comes to a day, a 24-hour period does have a natural cycle because that's day and night. And so does the half day, the 12 hours of the day. They also have a natural cycle of day and night, because that has to do with the sun setting and rising, as well as the completion of a 24-hour cycle. So as far as a day as a unit is concerned, that unit exists in the natural world, as well as the half day, I mean the day and night, those also exist. But to divide the day up into hours, first of all, does not necessarily have any impetus to drive it up into 12, as well as the fact of dividing up any hour into 60 minutes. And dividing 60 minutes up into 60 seconds is also something that's not part of the natural world, and we know that in the Gemara, actually, they divide up the minutes into chalakim. They divide it up into different units and not the same 60 units that we use. So we have these types of measurements that are somewhat arbitrary or are imposed because of systems of measurement. And there are others that are part of the natural world. So far, we've identified as items that are part of the natural world, the day and night cycle, as well as the monthly cycle. It turns out that there is also a yearly cycle that is part of the natural world, and that's the solar cycle. So the months are actually given by the lunar cycle, by the months of the moon, because that gives you a month. The solar cycle is something that is driven by the sun. It's a complete revolution of the earth around the sun. And when you get back to a location, then you completed a year. The problem with that is because of its nature of being circular, meaning that it happens and comes around again and again, then by definition, it's hard to identify where there is a starting point. Meaning that we understand that there's a year, but how do you identify the starting point of the year? And that's really part of the issue with Rosh Hashanah. Now, there might be some natural points during the year that you would expect to have at Rosh Hashanah, and those might relate to, first of all, the solstices or the equinoxes, because those are periods of time where we reach a certain point where it's easy to identify and there's a change. There's a clear change in the movement of the earth closer away from the sun. So it's very possible that, for instance, the secular calendar that's on January 1st is most likely associated with the winter solstice, and that might be borne out by the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Over there, the Gemara talks about a pagan holiday called Kalandra, and Kalandra turned out to be around the winter solstice, and it's very likely that that was a point at which you would consider beginning the year. And January 1st is probably something connected to the winter solstice, adjusting for the fact that they have months, and that you can't just have the solar year begin in the middle of a month. It has to start at a point in time where the month has completed. Now, how it moved or why it moved, that's a different discussion completely. But within the Jewish calendar, you're faced with the same problem. We know within the Torah that there's a demand that the holidays not only fall out on a specific lunar date, but they also fall out in certain seasons of the year. So because of that, our calendar incorporates both aspects. It incorporates the aspect of the lunar months, but it also incorporates within it the aspects of the solar year, that there is a fixed solar year. And we have to then adjust the lunar calendar in order to make it work with the solar calendar. The lunar year is 354 days, whereas the solar calendar is 365 days. That 11-day difference, we adjust for through the leap year system. And that's how we get the two to work out together so that they actually work. Now again, the lunar cycle Chazal were pretty aware of, and they knew that it was 29 and a half days and 793 chalakim, that it was not an exact day. But because of Limudim from the Psukim, we'll see that you have to have a full month. And therefore, you have to go between 29 and 30 days in order to adjust for the fact that it's not a full day. But because there's that leftover, besides the 29 and a half days, that leftover builds up, and therefore we have to adjust in the years. Sometimes we have an extra malay, an extra chaser, in order to adjust, aside from adjusting for the fact that we don't want Rosh Hashanah to fall out on certain days. So that's the way we deal with the calendar. But we're still left with the basic question is, when is Rosh Hashanah? And that is really a very difficult question. Hopefully we'll be able to address it later on in the Masechta. We'll talk more about it, why it's so ambiguous, and then why the first day of Tishrei was picked as the day that represents Rosh Hashanah. But even knowing all that information, it's still hard to understand why, without the Torah specifically telling us that it's Rosh Hashanah, when is Rosh Hashanah? Because you do have this circular nature of time, and we don't think of time in a linear sense, that it's endless. So since it's circular or spiral in nature, it comes back to a starting point. The question is, where do you set that starting point? And we're going to see here that for different types of things, or for different halachot, that maybe Rosh Hashanah is different because the start of the year or the end of the year for that item differs for these different items, whether it's fruits, vegetables, people, kings, all these different things might have their own unique time or specific time where we would consider starting the year because it makes sense to start the year at that point in time. And that's what makes Rosh Hashanah, in that sense, a difficult, ambiguous day, is because there really is no definition as to when is the proper time to begin the year. We do it around the equinox, which is in the fall time. Somewhere close to the equinox, we do our start of the year. But it's defined by a connection between the solar calendar and the fact that the lunar calendar, that month cuts off at the seventh month, the first day. So somewhere around there, that's where we begin our year in terms of certain items. But again, that's not borne out by the Torah. It's not obvious from the Torah that there is such a Rosh Hashanah on that day. That really comes from the Limudim of Chazal that we will see inside of the Masechta. So the Masechta, the first two Prakim deal with the issues of Rosh Hashanah and Kiddush HaChodesh. And the latter Prakim deal with the Shofar and the Tfilot that are the central part of Rosh Hashanah. And obviously the coalescing or the connection between the two, we have to figure out why that the Zichron Truah and the Yom Truah that are mentioned in the Torah are connected to the Kiddush HaChodesh or the Rosh Hashanah that is mentioned here in the Gemara. And for that reason now, we're going to start out with the Mishnah that already has arguments about when Rosh Hashanah is, and that is Arba'a Rosh Hashanim Haim. There are four Rosh Hashanahs during the year. Ve'chad b'Nisan. On the first of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah l'Melachim u'l'Regalim. It's the Rosh Hashanah for kings. That's the start of a king's year. Rashi over here claims that it's because of Mishum Shalom Malchut. In order to accord a certain amount of respect or allegiance to the kings, they used to date the contracts by the life or the reign of the king. So therefore, there was a gzeira or takana as to when the year cuts off. We'll discuss in the Gemara as to why you need something like that. Why can't you just start counting the years from the time he ascends the throne or he's coronated and then count the years from then? Why do we have a standardized time where the king's reign begins? which means that no matter when the king comes to power, as soon as he crosses over that threshold, that will begin his second year of his reign. So we'll discuss that in the Gemara. Tosafot says that that's only true with regards to Gittin. When it comes to a get, do we make something that's Shalom Malchus? And there he says, because of the nature of a get, it seems in their time was very public. And since it was a very public item, there they accorded the Malchut a certain amount of respect. And he also says that it really applies to non-Jewish monarchies. And that's when they did it for Shalom Malchut. But when it comes to Jewish monarchies, he doesn't think that's the reason. And therefore he disagrees with Rashi about Rosh Hashanah Malachim. He says it's a practical issue, which we'll get to in the Gemara, and not Mishom Shalom Malchut. Regalim, that is obvious. We'll see why it matters, but it's obvious in the Torah because of the way that the numbers or the months are enumerated. The Gemara takes for granted that the first month of the year is Nisan. It's called the Chodesh HaRishon in the Torah, and it's the Rosh Chodeshim. So as far as the months are concerned, they start from that point in time and they move forward. So Sukkot, Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah are all in Tishrei, which is the seventh month. So as far as the Regalim are concerned, we know they begin from that point in time in Rosh Chodesh and Nisan. Question is, why or where does it matter that they have a beginning to the year? As far as animals are concerned, Maaser Be'ema, their Rosh Hashanah is on the first of Elul. Again, here we have a pasuk that says, Aser Taser Kol Tvad Zarecha Hayotzei Asadeh Shana Shana. So first of all, it says Aser Taser. So there the Gemara darshins that it's talking about more than one Maaser. It's talking about Maaser Dagan and Maaser Be'ema. In addition, the pasuk ends, Shana Shana, to teach you that 1 year's crops or 1 year's behemot cannot be brought together with the next year's. That each year has its own maaser, its own separate maaser behema, separate maaser dagan, and you can't mix them together with other years. So now we have to find that point in time where the threshold is. And again, the Gemara will discuss why it's picked. Here it says it's the first of Elul. For those of Rabbi Shimon, I'm reading Bechad B'Tishrei, that it's on the first of Tishrei. Bechad B'Tishrei, on the first of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. That's the beginning of the years. Ulishmitim, for Shemitah. As Rashi says, that's when the Melachot Doraita kick in for Shemitah. Here Rashi mentions Harisha and Zriah, which is very interesting, because there is a Machloket amongst the Rishonim, whether Harisha is actually Doraita on Ta, but Rashi here clearly says it is. But as for Shemitah, as we know, the upcoming year, that Shemitah will come in at Rosh Hashanah. Uli Yovelot, for Yovel as well. That Rosh Hashanah is the time period, even though the practice of Yovel and the blowing of the shofar only takes place on Yom HaKippurim. Linitiyah, this is for Orla. In the first 3 years, a tree's fruits are restricted. In the fourth year, they are permitted. So Linitiyah, sapling, when it's planted, the years are counted from Rosh Hashanah, from Aleph Tishrei. That means if you plant it, for instance, on Aleph Elul, then when Aleph Tishrei comes around, you're already in the second year of that tree being planted. And so on and so forth until you clear the 3 years. Now, as far as the fruits are concerned, we have to deal with that separately, but as far as the orla of the tree itself, Rosh Chodesh, Tishrei is the governing time period as the Rosh Hashanah. Uli Rakot, and that's same true with vegetables. Now, with vegetables, this has to do with their maser. When you take off the trumot and masrot from them, your rakot, when you pick them, that designates their year. So the crossover point for them as to what's from the previous year and what's from the next year is at that point of Tishrei, Aleph Tishrei, the beginning of the year. Bechad v'Shvat, Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. On the first of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year for the ilanot. Kedivrei Beit Shammai. That's according to Beit Shammai. But Beit Hillel omrim b'chamishasar bo, tu b'Shvat, tedvav b'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for the ilanot. Now with the ilanot, it's different in terms of when their fruits cross over the year or become chayav and trumot masrot. That's to do with chanata, once they start to bud or emerge on the tree. So if things emerge before the Rosh Hashanah le'ilanot, then they belong to the previous year. If they bud or emerge after that point in time, they belong to the successive year. But their threshold or their year is different than the year for Yerakot. So already here we see this issue of, yes, there is a point in time in the year we have to start, but that is, I would call it flexible or somewhat different depending on the item that you are dealing with. Now the Gemara is going to go through each of these items and explain to us how do we know or why is it that there is a Rosh Hashanah for each of these items at that period of time. The Melachim, Lamai Chilchoto. For kings, what's the halacha that the Rosh Hashanah for kings is Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Amar Rav Chisda l'shtarot. It has an afkamino of four contracts. Ditznan, shtari chova muktamim psulim. If you have a contract that documents a loan, but the dating on the contract precedes the actual loan, it's pasul. Ve'mucharim, if it's beyond the date, meaning it's later than the date of the actual loan, then it is kasher k'sherim. We'll explain this because when it comes to a shtar allows the person who lent the money to come afterwards and collect. And he's a creditor that gets precedence to First of all, creditors that come after him. And number two is, if there was property that was encumbered by his loan, then if people buy that land from the individual after the loan was made, he can go afterwards. If the debtor does not pay him back, he can go and take that land from the buyers because it was encumbered to him. He had it collateralized for his loan. So the date of the loan is very important inside of a shtar. And it's only true of a loan that is made with a shtar, with a document, because that has a kol. Because they didn't have a registry in that day. You couldn't go look up and see when things were encumbered or not encumbered to loans. So therefore, the only way to make sure that people knew about it was to make it a public issue. So the Gemara says that shtarot, when it came to contracts, everybody knew about them. That made it a public issue. If it was just an oral transaction, then other people wouldn't know about it. How would buyers know to be careful not to buy this land because it was encumbered? So it only applies to shtarot. So if you go ahead and make a loan, and then you take a shtar to document the loan, and you predate the shtar, you're actually giving rights to the creditor that he doesn't deserve. He now can go with that shtar and take land that was sold before he encumbered the land, before he collateralized it for his loan, and he could take it from the buyers, and that would be improper or incorrect, because he didn't have a right to do that. They bought it prior to the loan. So in that case, we're going to say that the shtar is pasul, it's a knas, because he acted inappropriately. He was trying to cheat out other players by predating his ability to collect on the loan. On the other hand, if he postdates it, meaning that the contract is written after the date that the loan was actually given, then it's not a big deal. He's actually losing out on his rights. He is now pushing his rights further back, and that means that people that transacted between the time of the loan and the time of the document, they don't have any problem anymore because they're pre the date of the contract. So it's actually to his loss and his detriment and not to anybody else's detriment. So over there we say the shtar is fine. So what Rashi explains over here is that if we dated contracts from the time that the king ascended to the throne, then, for instance, we had a loan in Tammuz, we have a contract in Kislev. Now, how do I know which it is? Did the loan precede the contract, or did the contract precede the loan? It's Tammuz and Kislev. Well, you know that Tammuz comes before Kislev in the calendar. Well, that's only true if you have a point in time where the calendar starts. If I know that the calendar always starts at Nisan, then I know Tammuz is always before Kislev. On the other hand, if I don't know when the calendar starts, and that is based on the possibility that the king who came into power would start counting from whenever his reign began, well, there's a possibility then if his reign began before Tammuz, then Tammuz precedes Kislev. If his reign began between Tammuz and Kislev, it means that Kislev preceded Tammuz. So now we have a problem. This shtar that we have in front of us, we don't know if it's a shtar mukdam or shtar meuchar. We don't know if the document was there before the loan or after the loan, because we don't know the order, because we don't remember when the king came to power, and it's not clear to everybody when the year began. And misafek, it seems that Rashi says that you would not be able to collect with such a document because you wouldn't know. So because of that problem, they came to a standardized date for the starting of all years, which would be Nisan. And by that definition, Tammuz always comes before Kislev, because Nisan is the first month of the year, it's the beginning of the year for the kings. So that standardization avoided these types of problems. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi on 2 points. Number one is, he says, even when we have a safek in a contract, we don't automatically assume it's bad. We actually assume that it's good. Number two is, what are we worried about? That the person who's writing the contracts, the sofer, he's been writing contracts all year, and now all of a sudden you're going to worry about him getting mixed up between the dates and the years of this. He's been doing it for a whole year that this king's been around. Why would you assume that he's going to make a mistake? So Tosafot disagrees with Rashi, and he says that the reason they set this up is because of the possibility that a king came to power on the first of Nisan. And then the sofer forgets, was it the first Nisan or the second Nisan that he came to be coronated, or he began his reign? So the next year, on the first of Nisan, he writes that it is part of the first year of his reign. Now, the truth is, it's already the second year of his reign, because he really came to power on the first of Nisan. And Tosafot says, we've seen the Gemara in many places, people make a mistake between one day and the next. So over here, if he made a mistake between the first of Nisan and the second Nisan, that is a reasonable mistake for him to make. And here, all of a sudden, he writes that it was given, the loan or the contract happened in the first year of this king on Aleph Nisan. Now, the truth is that it's already the second year and it's Aleph Nisan. So he's actually predating the contract by a year. And that's the problem here. We're afraid that the sofer is going to make that little adjustment or little issue, and then he's going to make that mistake and it's going to cause us major issues. So Tosafot says and asks on himself, then why don't we have the same problem? Once we establish Rosh Hashanah Lemelachim is on Aleph Nisan, you could say the same thing about Chavtet Adar. On the 29th of Adar, he comes to power on the 29th of Adar, and then he switches next year, and all of a sudden now, by Aleph Nisan, it's the second year of his reign. So why wouldn't we say he makes a mistake between the fact of the 29th or the 1st, he doesn't know when he came to power, and he'll mark the contract on the 29th of Adar as being part of his first year, even though it was really his second year. So Tosafot says that's not an issue, because 29th of Adar is the end of the year. So the Sofer has been writing contracts all year saying that this is the second year of reign of this king. Because when he came to power in the Chavtet Adar, as soon as the Rosh Chodesh came, it became the second year. So now he's marking everything as the second year. So he comes to the end of the year, on the 29th of Adar, he's not going to make a mistake and call it the first year. He's been writing to second year all the way along. So Tosafot says that's what it does. It solves the problem of having to know when the crossover point is and have the Sofer make a mistake between the first and second of Nisan. So because of that, they came to a standardized point. I think both for Rashi and Tosafot, the basic answer is that if we have a standardized date where the rain cuts over, then everybody knows that that's the order of the months, number one. And number two is, they know that when they are putting the dates in the contract and the years in the contract, that you can base it on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It doesn't matter when the king came to power. You know that that's the crossover point, and that's the time you have to check which year of reign it is for the king. So that's how the Gemara explains the reason for establishing Rosh Chodesh Nisan as the Rosh Hashanah leMelachim. Now, Tanur Banan, we bring a Braita. Melech Shamad Be'Srim V'Tisha Be'Adar, a king that comes to power on the 29th of Adar, Kevin Shigia Echad B'Nisan Alta Lo Shana. Once you get to the first Nisan, he has now completed his first year of his reign, and now he begins the second year of his reign. If he comes to power on the first of Nisan, meaning a day later, then then his second year of his reign only begins a year later when he gets back to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So again, the difference between a day will matter whether it's the second year of his reign or the first year of his reign. Amar Mar. So now the Gemara wants to understand the break. Melech Shamad Be'Srim V'Tisha B'Adar. As soon as he gets to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that's it. The first year is done. He's in the second year of his reign. Ha, Kamash Malon, that teaches us the Nisan Rosh Hashanah Melachim. That teaches us that the date for crossover of the reign of the kings is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that's what we learn from here. Rosh Hashanah Melachim is from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. V'yom echad b'shana chashuv shana. And the second thing we learn is that one day in the year is considered to be a full year. So as long as he reigned for a single day, that's the equivalent of an entire year. And at that point, he already starts his second year of his reign. So that's what we learned from the first line of the Braita. Number one is that Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And number two is one day suffices to be counted as a full year. Then the next line of the Braita is, V'mlo amad elo be'achad minisan. If he only comes to power on the first of Nisan, ein monlim no shana shigia Nisan acher. Then we don't count his reign as the second year until he reaches Nisan the following year. The Gemara says, Pshita. Why would you have thought otherwise? It says, Lo, Tzricha di'imnu alei me'adar. They already had come to a conclusion or consensus that he would be the king in Adar. But he did not get coronated or begin his reign until Nisan. So, Ma'adu te'ma nimnu lei tartin shnin. We'll consider it. Since they came to a consensus that he would be appointed as the king, that was enough to start his first year of his reign. And then when we get to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it will be the second year. Mashmalan, it only counts from the day of his coronation, the day that he begins to rule, not from the time that they decided to appoint him as the king. So now we have another Tosefta Breita that's brought. Tanur Banan. Meit ba'adar v'amad acher tachtav. If the king passes away in Adar, and a new king is appointed in Adar. Monim shana l'zeh u'l'zeh. They each get to count that year as a year of their reign. Meaning the other king, this is the final year of his reign, and it counts as a full year. And the new king will count the residual of Adar as the first year of his reign, and then he'll kick into the second year when Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Rosh Hashanah comes around. Meit v'Nisan, if the king passes away in Nisan, v'amad acher tachtav, and then the new king comes to replace him, again, v'Nisan, monim shana l'zeh l'zeh, they both get a year. The other king gets a full year, even though he only reigned for a month into it, or a couple of days into it, and the new king will take that as his first year, even though he's missing a couple of days from the year. Meit v'Adar, if he died the previous king in Adar, v'amad acher tachtav b'Nisan, and the new king only was coronated and put into power in Nisan, monim rishona l'rishon v'shniyah l'sheni. Then the years are separate. The final year of the king that was reigning is the year before, based on Adar, and the new king will only count his first year, starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and there'll be this gap in time where there was nobody there, and there will be no assignment of the year to the new king, because he wasn't in power yet. And the old king will just finish up his year in the year that he's in. So the Gemara now again will investigate this breita and says, Amar Mar. Meit ba'adar v'amad acher tachtav ba'adar monim shana l'zeh u'l'zeh again pshita. That's simple, of course. If he passed away in Adar, then the king that passed away, we've been counting this as a year of his reign all the way through, so what's the question? And the new king, as soon as he becomes into power, we said once you get to Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it flips to the next year of his reign. So of course, the Adar is going to count as the first year of his reign. Mar says, Ma'u detema shata the betray lo maninan. We would have thought that's only true when it's a single king. But for two kings to count the same year as being a part of their reign, mean that you're basically having an overlapping count in years now when you count the rule of the monarch, because the year that the other monarch was the last year of his reign, but it's also the first year of the new monarch. So maybe we wouldn't do that. Mashmalan that we do that. Meit b'Nisan v'amad acher tachtav b'Nisan monim shana l'zeh l'zeh. Pshita, again, that's pshita. Ma'adu teima ki amrinan yom echad b'shana chashuv shana. When do we say that one day of the year is considered to be a full year? That's Besov Shana. That's at the end of the year. So here, the last day of Adar comes into role, we'll count it as a full year. But in the beginning of the year, where it's the previous king, went a couple of days or one day into Nisan, we'll say Lo Amrinan. Then we're not going to say one day is considered the whole year, because you've got the whole year still remaining to go. Mashmalon, that we say Yom Echad B'Shana is considered a Shana, both at the end and in the beginning. Now the last stanza or phrase in the Braita, which is, Meit Ba'Adar, V'amad Acher Tachta B'Nisan. He died in Adar, the previous king, and the new king was only coronated and brought to reign in Nisan. Monim Rishonah, the Rishon, then the previous year is counted towards the old king, and Shniah, the Sheni, then the new year, the Nisan is counted as the year for the king. They never overlap. Gemara says, Pshita, says, Lo Tzricha de Imnu Alei Me'Adar, Umelech Ben Melechu. So now here the Gemara has to add in an additional Chiddush. Because we already had in the previous Braita, we already learned that if you were appointed, or there was a consensus that you'd be king, but you only were coronated or began to reign in the subsequent month, that doesn't count. It's not enough. It's when you start your reign. So to say that that's the Chiddush in this Braita or in this Tosefta doesn't mean anything. We already have that from the previous Braita. Now, if Tosefta says, oh, it's the Reish and the Seifa. And he says, well, even if it's not the Reish and the Seifa, the fact is that the Gemara here sees these two as being correlated, these two Braitot. And therefore, the information that we learned in the first Braita, we can't be learning in the second Braita. That's why in this Tosefta, the Gemara is bringing new Chidushim for each part of the Braita, each Bava of the Braita. In the first Braita, we learned the Chiddush of Yom Echad B'Shana is Chashuv Shana. We also learned that Rosh Hashanah L'Melachim is Nisan. We also learned that, and if there's a consensus to make him the king, but he only comes to reign in Nisan, that he doesn't count, and to accept from the time of his reign, he doesn't get that extra year. And now, we moved into the next Braita. The next Braita says, well, Yom Echad B'Shana, we know from the first Braita, so what else do we need to know? Oh, Yom Echad B'Shana in the beginning is just like it is at the end of the year. We know that two kings can overlap in their reign, and that teaches us something we didn't see from the first Braita, because I was only talking about one king, is that you're allowed to count a single year towards the reign of two kings. And now this last stanza is adding one additional item, which is, you could have said, oh, they just appointed the king, but he didn't come to reign. That was the Chiddush from the first Braita. I don't need that again. So here they add another dimension, which is that he's a Melech ben Melech. He is a prince, he is the son of the king, and kingship passes by Yerusha, and his child reigns after him, especially with Machut Beit David. Over there, the lineage of David are rulers of Bnei Israel, and so over here, he's both a prince, and they've come to consensus that he's going to be the king. So you would think that it's almost like an automatic ascent to the throne. Mar says, Kamash Malon, that that's not the case, even though it's almost like a foregone conclusion that he's going to be the king, because he's the crown prince. And he has a unanimous consensus of the individuals that they want to appoint him as the king. Nevertheless, we don't count his reign until he's actually coronated and put on the throne. And that's what we learn from this. That we don't say that. Now we'll begin a little bit with this and we'll continue tomorrow. How do you know that you count for the Melachim in Nisan? How do you know that Nisan should be the date that you pick to make a Rosh Hashanah Melachim? Okay, we understand why there's a need to have a Rosh Hashanah Melachim. But then how do you know which day of the year to pick? Why can't you pick Rosh Chodesh this, or Rosh Chodesh that, or Rosh Hashanah this? How did you know to pick Rosh Chodesh Nisan as the date to make it the Rosh Hashanah Melachim? Shenemar, because he says in the Pasuk, and Melachim says when Shlomo HaMelech comes to build a Beit HaMikdash, says, Vayi b'shmonim shana, v'arba meyot shana, letzeit b'nei Yisrael me'er Mitzrayim, 480 years after b'nei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, b'shana harivit, in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign, B'chodesh Ziv, in the month of Ziv, Hu Chodesh HaSheni, that is the second month of the year, Limloch Shlomo Al Yisrael. And that's out of order. It's like B'Shana Revit, Limloch Shlomo Al Yisrael. It's the fourth year when Shlomo has ruled over Kalal Yisrael. It's the fourth year of his reign. And when is this happening? It's happening in the second month, which is the Chodesh Ziv. Rabbi Yochanan says, Mekish Machut Shlomo Litziat Mitzrayim. In the Pasuk, you have adjacency between the Machut of Shlomo and Yitziat Mitzrayim. My Yitziat Mitzrayim in Nisan, just like Yitziat Mitzrayim is clearly counted from Nisan, the adjacency of Malchut Shlomo comes to teach you that Ma Yitziat Mitzrayim in Nisan af Malchut Shlomo in Nisan. Yitziat Mitzrayim gufa minalan, de Nisan mi aninan. How do you know Yitziat Mitzrayim itself is from Nisan? Tell me Tishrei mi aninan. Maybe we count it from Tishrei. Gemara says lo saka dapcho, you would never think this. Dichtiv, because it says, Vayal Aron akoen el horahar al pi Hashem. Aron goes up to horahar when he's going to pass away. He dies there in the 40th year when Bnei Israel have left Mitzrayim. On Rosh Chodesh Av, Aaron passes away. It's the 40th year after he left Mitzrayim, and he dies in that 40th year on Hor HaHar on Rosh Chodesh Av. Then Sefer Devarim begins with Moshe's Ne'um to the people, and it says, "Vayi b'arba'im shana b'shtei asar chodesh be'echad chodesh." It's in the 40th year, in the 11th month, the first of the month, which is Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Dimer Moshe. Moshe begins his speech in Sefer Devarim, which will last 37 days until he passes away. So, midigayi ba'av b'gari le'shnat arba'im. Since in Av, when Aaron died, you're standing there and we call it the 40th year, v'gayi b'shvat, and then we go to Shvat and we call it shnat arba'im, michlau, to Rosh Hashanah lav tishrei. It's clear that Rosh Hashanah is not Tishrei. So we'll stop over here with the Gemara. So here the Gemara proves to you that it's certainly not Tishrei. The Gemara only threw out Tishrei as an alternative here, and so it's clear that Tishrei doesn't work, because between Av and Shvat, the year didn't turn over. It was still 40 years since the time they left Mitzrayim. The Gemara will challenge this proof from a number of aspects, but it will also ask the question, and we'll see that in tomorrow's daf, is, okay, so it's not Tishrei, but there are other months that don't fall between Av and Shvat, and they are the possibility, like Adar or Tammuz, that could be the Rosh Hashanah Melachim. So how do we know that it's Rosh Hashanah Melachim? So here, Rabbi Yochanan gives us a suggestion that has to do with the Hekesh in the Pasuk, the connection between Melachim, kings, and Yitziat Mitzrayim. So once we've established that fact, now we have to just prove that Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Rosh Hashanah for it, is Nisan. Now Tosafot does point out, based on Rabbi Yochanan, it's not clear that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for Yitziat Mitzrayim. Based on the puzzle that we have here, it's 480 years from the time they left Mitzrayim, it could be the 15th of Nisan. And tomorrow's daf will have an additional proof. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is considered to be the Rosh, and the years turn over on that date. So we'll see that Rosh Chodesh is actually their turnover point and not the 15th of Nisan. But from what you're learning out from Yitziat Mitzrayim so far, you only know that the 15th of Nisan is the beginning of the year. To know the first, we'll know that, figure that out tomorrow. But what we see from here is that Rosh Hashanah for Yitziat Mitzrayim is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Based on that Hekesh, Machut Shlomo, so too for the Jewish kings, we're going to say the same thing, that the Rosh Hashanah Shalahem is on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Okay, we'll stop over here.